A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking how to build a care roster system for two parents who are doing this without daycare or outside help. The core tension here is that planning shifts and creating a smooth handover sounds bureaucratic on paper, but anyone who's done it knows it's the difference between functioning and falling apart. He wants to talk about how to actually implement this thing.
I love this topic. I love it because it sits right at the intersection of operational logistics and human psychology. And the thing most people get wrong is they think the roster is about dividing labor. It's not. It's about preserving cognitive bandwidth. When you're sleep deprived and the baby is crying, you don't want to be negotiating. You don't want to be asking whose turn is it or what needs to happen next. The roster eliminates those decisions in advance. It's the same principle as a cockpit checklist. You offload decisions you can't afford to make in the moment.
The roster is really a pre-negotiated treaty.
And like any treaty, it fails if the terms are ambiguous. I looked at what actually works for dual-parent households without external support, and there's a consistent pattern. The successful ones use what researchers call fixed anchor points, non-negotiable transitions that happen at the same time every day, regardless of how the night went.
Give me a concrete example.
The classic one is the 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. handoff. One parent is the overnight person. They do all wake-ups between, say, 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. The other parent takes over at 5 a.m. and does the early morning shift until 8. That gives the overnight parent a guaranteed 3-hour sleep block no matter how bad the night was.
A guaranteed 3-hour block. That's the anchor.
And there's actual sleep science behind this. A 3-hour block lets you complete at least one full sleep cycle, roughly 90 minutes, and possibly two. Fragmented sleep where you never complete a cycle is what causes the cognitive impairment. The guaranteed block is what keeps you functional.
The handoff time isn't arbitrary. 5 a.m. isn't just a number someone pulled out of the air.
No, it's strategic. It's early enough that the overnight parent still gets morning sleep, and it gives the morning parent uninterrupted time before the day really starts. But here's the part most people miss. The handoff itself needs a procedure.
Not just, here's the baby, good luck.
I've seen households where the handoff is literally three sentences. The oncoming parent asks three questions. When did the baby last eat? Any concerning symptoms? What's the next feed window? That's it. 15 seconds, and the offgoing parent is released.
That's remarkably concise.
It has to be. The handoff is not a debrief. It's not a therapy session. It's not a chance to process how hard the night was. Those conversations can happen later during overlapping awake time. The handoff itself is purely operational. Transfer information, transfer responsibility, done.
Because the person coming off shift is running on fumes, and the person coming on needs clarity, not narrative.
And there's a term for what happens when you blur that boundary. Researchers call it role confusion. When both parents are simultaneously trying to be on, you get duplicated effort and mutual resentment. I thought you were watching him. No, I thought you were.
The classic I was just about to, standoff.
Which is why the roster has to specify who is the primary parent at any given moment. Not who is in the room. Not who is helping. Who is the designated responsible adult?
Designated responsible adult. That's a term of art.
Borrowed from aviation, actually. The pilot flying versus pilot monitoring distinction. There's always exactly one pilot flying, even if both pilots are in the cockpit and both are qualified. The same principle applies here. At any given moment, one parent is the designated responsible adult. The other is either off-duty, sleeping, or in a support role.
The roster isn't just a schedule of who's with the baby. It's a schedule of who owns the responsibility.
And ownership is the right word. When you're the designated responsible adult, you make the calls. You don't check with the other parent unless it's a genuine emergency. The off-duty parent is not consulted, not disturbed, not even informed until the next handoff unless it's urgent.
That requires trust.
It requires trust, and it requires letting go of the idea that both parents need to agree on every decision. The roster is also a delegation of authority, not just a division of time.
Walk me through what a full day looks like under a system like this.
Let me sketch out a two-parent, no-support roster that I've seen work. And the first thing to understand is that it's not a single repeating schedule. It's usually a weekday schedule and a weekend schedule, because the working parent's availability changes.
Right, because one parent is usually working, even if it's remote.
Even if it's remote. So let's say the weekday schedule. Parent A does overnight, 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. Parent B takes 5 a.m. to 8 a.m., giving Parent A a 3-hour sleep block. Parent B then hands off to Parent A at 8 a.m. and goes to work, or goes to their workspace if they're remote. Parent A is primary from 8 a.m. to noon. Then at noon, Parent B comes back for a 30-minute overlap. This is what I call the midday reset. Parent B takes the baby for 30 minutes while Parent A eats, showers, whatever. Then, Parent A is back on from 12:30 to 5 p.m.
That's a long afternoon stretch.
It is, and that's where the schedule usually needs the most tuning. Some families swap in a second short break around 3 p.m., but the key is that at 5 p.m., there's another handoff, this time with a slightly longer overlap, maybe 15 minutes, because you're exchanging more information about the day. Parent B takes 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Parent A gets a 3-hour break, dinner, downtime, whatever. At 8 p.m., Parent A takes over for the overnight shift and Parent B is off until 5 a.m. the next morning.
Parent B gets roughly 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. That's 9 hours of off-duty time, assuming the baby sleeps through.
Parent A gets the 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. block, plus the midday reset, plus the 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. evening break. It's not symmetrical, but it's predictable.
Predictable is the operating word here.
Predictable is everything. There was a fascinating study out of the University of Pittsburgh a few years back. They looked at cortisol levels in new parents and found that the stress response wasn't correlated with total sleep hours. It was correlated with sleep predictability. Parents who knew when their next sleep block was coming, even if it was short, had lower cortisol than parents who got more total sleep but couldn't predict when.
Uncertainty is its own form of exhaustion.
It's a cognitive tax. Every minute you spend wondering, will I get to sleep tonight, is a minute of mental energy you're not spending on the baby or on yourself.
The roster is an anxiety reduction tool, not just a scheduling tool.
That's exactly what it is, and this is where I see most parents get the implementation wrong. They create the roster, but they don't treat it as binding. They treat it as aspirational. This is what we'll try to do. And then when the baby has a bad night, they improvise, and the roster evaporates.
What's the alternative? Because babies don't read the roster.
No, but the roster is designed for bad nights. That's the whole point. The anchor points hold even when everything else is chaos. The 5 a.m. handoff happens at 5 a.m. regardless of whether the baby slept or not. The designated responsible adult is still the designated responsible adult. The structure doesn't depend on everything going well. It's there precisely for when things go badly.
The roster is most important when it's hardest to follow.
That's the paradox. And the families I've seen make this work have one thing in common. They treat the roster the way you'd treat a medication schedule. You don't skip a dose because you're tired. You don't negotiate with the clock.
What about weekends?
Weekends are where you can build in recovery. The most common pattern I've seen is that Saturday becomes the primary caregiver's recovery day. The working parent takes a longer shift, sometimes a full 6 or 8 hour block, giving the primary parent a genuine break. Sunday is the reverse, or Sunday is split evenly.
The handoff procedure, you mentioned the 3 questions. Is that written down somewhere?
It should be. And this is where I get genuinely excited, because there's a beautiful simplicity to a well-designed handoff card, physical, not digital, stuck to the fridge or the nursery door.
You wanted physical.
Physical means it can't be ignored. It doesn't require unlocking a phone. It doesn't get lost in a notification stack. And there's something about the physical act of checking the boxes that reinforces the ritual.
What's on the card?
The version I recommend has 5 fields. Last feed, time and amount, last diaper, wet or soiled, and when. Medications, if any, dose and time, symptoms, anything out of the ordinary, even minor. And next feed window, the do not disturb unless threshold. That last one is crucial because it tells the oncoming parent what urgent actually means for the next block.
The oncoming parent knows the baby is fine until, say, 10:30, and doesn't need to check in before that.
It preempts the check-in impulse. and the off-going parent writes it down, hands off, and walks away. No, oh, one more thing. The card is the transfer.
The card is the transfer. That's a good line.
I've been workshopping it.
We've got the daily roster. We've got the handoff procedure. We've got the designated responsible adult concept. What's the thing that breaks this system most often?
The thing that breaks it is resentment about asymmetry. Because in almost every two-parent household, the roster is not perfectly balanced. One parent carries more hours, usually the breastfeeding parent, for obvious biological reasons. And the parent with fewer hours starts to feel guilty, and the parent with more hours starts to feel resentful, and neither of them says anything because they're too tired to have the conversation.
The roster needs a built-in mechanism for addressing imbalance.
It needs what I call the weekly audit. 15 minutes scheduled every Sunday evening. Both parents sit down and look at the week ahead. They ask three questions: what worked last week, what didn't work, and does the roster need to change for any reason this week?
That's the whole meeting.
That's the whole meeting. It's not a feeling session. It's not a relationship check-in. It's an operational review. You're looking at the roster the way you'd look at a production schedule. What's the throughput? Where are the bottlenecks? Is anyone at risk of burnout?
The production metaphor might sound cold to some people.
But here's the thing. The warmth doesn't come from the roster. The warmth comes from the fact that the roster frees you up to actually enjoy your child and your partner. When you're not constantly negotiating, when you're not silently keeping score, when you know exactly when your next break is coming, that's when you can be present.
The bureaucracy enables the intimacy.
That's it. That's the paradox. The more structured the handoff, the more relaxed the time in between. The more explicit the expectations, the less room for resentment. The more predictable the schedule, the more spontaneous the moments within it.
It's like the frame around a painting. The frame is rigid, but it's what lets you see the painting.
I'm using that.
So what about the onboarding? If a couple hasn't been doing this and they want to start, what's day one?
Day one is not implementing the full roster. Day one is a conversation where you agree on one anchor point. Pick the most painful transition of the day. For most people, it's the overnight to morning handoff, and agree on a fixed time and a fixed procedure for that one transition. Do that for a week.
One anchor point for 1 week.
Because if you try to implement a full 16-hour roster with handoff cards and designated responsible adult designations overnight, it'll collapse. People need to build the muscle. They need to experience the benefit of one reliable anchor before they'll trust the system enough to add more.
You're essentially doing an MVP, a minimum viable product, for your parenting schedule.
Yes, and I'm not even being cute with the startup metaphor. You're testing a hypothesis. If we create a predictable handoff, we'll both function better, with the smallest possible implementation. If it works, you expand. If it doesn't, you iterate.
What's the most common iteration after the first week?
The most common iteration is adjusting the anchor time. Couples often discover that 5 a.m. is too early or too late for their specific situation. Maybe the overnight parent would do better with a 4 a.m. handoff. Maybe the morning parent needs it at 6. The exact time matters less than the consistency.
After the anchor point is solid,
you add the handoff card. Then you add the second anchor, usually the evening transition. Then you add the midday reset. You build the roster incrementally over 3 or 4 weeks.
This sounds suspiciously like project management.
It is project management. The project is keeping two adults functional while keeping a small human alive. There's no reason to be embarrassed about applying project management tools to the hardest project most people will ever run.
I think there's a cultural resistance to this. People feel like parenting should be intuitive, natural, organic, and a roster feels like the opposite of that.
The natural parenting ideal is a luxury good. It's what you get to believe in when you have a village. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, paid childcare, a community that absorbs the overflow. When it's just two people in an apartment with no backup, natural is a fast track to collapse.
The village was the original roster.
The village provided the structure, the predictability, the designated responsible adults. It wasn't one person doing everything intuitively. It was multiple people with clearly understood roles. The roster is what you build when the village isn't there.
The roster is a synthetic village.
It's an artificial structure that replicates the function of extended family support. It's not as warm, it's not as flexible, but it does the job.
What about when one Baron gets sick? The roster assumes two functional adults.
That's the stress test, and this is where you need what I call the emergency protocol, a pre-agreed set of rules for when the roster goes out the window. The most important rule is that the sick parent is off the roster entirely. They're not primary, they're not backup, they're not even in the decision loop. They're in bed.
Which means the healthy parent is doing everything.
And that's brutal, but it's finite. The emergency protocol also specifies what sick means. Fever above a certain threshold, vomiting, whatever your household defines. The key is that you define it in advance, because you cannot negotiate it when someone is already ill.
The other emergency scenario. What about when the baby is sick?
Sick baby protocol is different. Sick baby overrides the roster in one specific way. The designated responsible adult can call in the off-duty parent at any time. There's no, you're off the clock. A sick baby is all hands. But the protocol also specifies that as soon as the acute situation passes, you revert to the roster. You don't let a one-night illness permanently dissolve the structure.
Because the structure is what you'll need to get through the next thing.
The roster is not a fair-weather system. It's built to handle disruption, but it only works if you return to it.
Let's talk about the digital versus physical question more broadly. You mentioned the physical handoff card. What about the roster itself? Is that on a whiteboard? A shared calendar?
I have opinions about this.
I would expect nothing less.
Apps fail in predictable ways. They require both parents to have their phones charged and nearby. They send notifications that get dismissed. They introduce friction. Unlock, open app, navigate to the right screen at exactly the moment when friction is most costly.
You're anti-app.
I'm pro-whiteboard. A large whiteboard in a central location. Kitchen, hallway, wherever both parents pass frequently. The roster is written on it in marker. It's visible at all times. It can't be swiped away. It doesn't need to be charged.
The whiteboard is the single source of truth.
It's ambient. You don't have to go looking for it. You glance at it as you walk past and you know whose shift it is. That ambient quality matters more than people realize. It reduces the number of times you have to actively think about the schedule.
What goes on the whiteboard beyond the shift schedule?
The shift schedule for the current day and the next day, that's the main display. The handoff card template, a permanent section that gets erased and refilled at each handoff. And a small notes section for anything non-urgent that needs to be communicated but doesn't belong in the handoff. We're low on diapers, the pediatrician called back, that kind of thing.
The whiteboard is the operating system.
It's the dashboard. And just like a car dashboard, you want the critical indicators visible at a glance, and the secondary information accessible but not distracting.
What about longer-term planning? Doctor's appointments, developmental milestones, that sort of thing?
That goes in a shared digital calendar. The whiteboard is for the next 48 hours. The calendar is for everything beyond that. You don't want to clutter the whiteboard with next week's appointments.
There's a two-tier system. Whiteboard for tactical, calendar for strategic.
And the weekly audit is where you bridge the two. You look at the calendar, you look at the whiteboard, and you make sure the roster for the coming week accounts for any appointments or irregularities.
This is starting to sound like a fairly complete system. Anchor points, handoff procedure, designated responsible adult, whiteboard dashboard, weekly audit, emergency protocols.
I want to add one more piece because it's the piece that most people skip. The roster needs a built-in review cycle for the roster itself.
A meta roster.
Call it a quarterly review. Every 3 months, you step back and ask, is this roster still working for our child's current developmental stage? A roster designed for a 3-month-old doesn't work for a 9-month-old. Sleep patterns change, feeding schedules change, nap needs change. The roster has to evolve.
Otherwise, you're optimizing for a baby you no longer have.
And this is where parents often get stuck. They build a roster that works, they get comfortable with it, and then the baby changes and suddenly the roster is creating problems instead of solving them. But they're too exhausted to redesign it, so they just abandon it.
Then they're back to improvising.
And they blame the concept of the roster instead of blaming the fact that they didn't update it.
The quarterly review is a forcing function.
It's a scheduled opportunity to ask what's different now and what needs to change. And it doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be 30 minutes, but it has to be on the calendar.
You mentioned developmental stages. Are there specific roster patterns for different ages?
The newborn phase, 0 to 3 months, is pure survival. The roster is built around feeding intervals, which are short and unpredictable. The anchor points are looser because the baby's schedule is looser. The goal is not optimization, it's making sure each parent gets at least one sleep block per 24 hours.
The newborn roster is a minimum viable roster.
It's triage. Then from 3 to 6 months, you start to get more predictability. The baby's circadian rhythm is developing. You can start setting firmer anchor points. The handoff procedure becomes more reliable because you can actually predict when the baby will need to eat next.
6 months plus?
6 to 12 months is when the roster really shines. The baby is usually on a more regular nap and feeding schedule. You can build the roster around those fixed points, the morning nap, the afternoon nap, the bedtime routine. The roster starts to feel less like crisis management and more like a sustainable operating rhythm.
Then toddlerhood blows it all up again.
Toddlerhood introduces a new variable, the child's will. You're no longer just managing feeding and sleeping. You're managing tantrums, boundary testing, and a small person who has strong opinions about everything. The roster has to account for the fact that a handoff during a tantrum is a different kind of handoff. The handoff card still works, but you add a new field, emotional state. He's been upset about the blue cup for 20 minutes. Don't offer the red cup. Don't mention the blue cup. Just wait it out. That kind of tactical intelligence becomes part of the transfer.
The handoff evolves from purely physical information to psychological information.
And that's actually a good thing. It means your child is developing normally. But it requires the roster to be more flexible. The designated responsible adult might need to tag out during a particularly intense tantrum, not because their shift is over, but because they're emotionally depleted.
You need a tap-out protocol.
You need a tap-out protocol. And this is one of the most important emergency procedures for the toddler phase. Either parent can call a tap-out at any time, no questions asked, no judgment, the other parent takes over immediately. The tap-out is not a failure, it's a safety valve.
How long does a tap-out last?
Long enough to reset, not long enough to disrupt the roster. The parent who tapped out goes to another room, closes the door, does whatever they need to do, and comes back. If they need longer, that's a sign that the roster itself needs to be adjusted.
The tap-out as a diagnostic tool.
If one parent is tapping out frequently during a particular time of day, that time of day needs to be restructured. Maybe it's a longer shift than it should be. Maybe it coincides with a difficult part of the child's routine. The tap-out reveals where the roster is failing.
This is all very systematic. I'm curious about the cultural dimension here. Are there communities or countries where this kind of explicit parenting roster is more or less accepted?
There's an interesting split. In cultures with strong extended family traditions, the roster is implicit. It's distributed across grandparents, aunts, uncles, neighbors. Nobody calls it a roster, but the function is the same. In more individualistic cultures where nuclear families are isolated, the roster has to be explicit because there's no distributed system to fall back on.
The explicitness is a symptom of isolation.
It's a compensation mechanism, and I think that's why some people find it off-putting. It makes the isolation visible. A whiteboard with shift schedules is a document of the fact that you're doing this alone.
That's a poignant observation.
It's not meant to be sad. It's meant to be practical. The isolation is real, whether you document it or not. The roster doesn't create the isolation. It addresses it.
So, if someone's listening to this and thinking, I need this, but my partner will never agree to something so structured, what's the approach?
Start with the problem, not the solution. Don't walk in and say, I've designed a comprehensive care roster system with anchor points and handoff procedures. Walk in and say, I'm exhausted, and I think we're stepping on each other's toes. Can we try one thing, just one, to make the mornings less chaotic?
Sell the benefit, not the system.
Sell the benefit, implement the smallest possible version of the system, and let the results speak for themselves. Once the other parent experiences a predictable handoff and a guaranteed sleep block, they'll usually come around.
If they don't?
If they don't, the roster is not the problem. The resistance to structure is usually about something else. Control, guilt, an idealized vision of parenting that can't survive contact with reality. That's a different conversation, and it's beyond the scope of the scheduling system.
That's a diplomatic way of saying it's a relationship issue.
I'm a retired pediatrician, not a couples therapist. I know where my expertise ends.
Speaking of expertise, we've been talking about two-parent households. Does any of this apply to single parents?
Single parents need a different framework entirely because they don't have a co-parent to hand off to. But the principle of anchor points still applies. A single parent needs to identify the one or two external anchors they can rely on. A neighbor who can take the baby for an hour on Tuesday afternoons, a friend who does a video call with the toddler every morning while the parent showers.
The roster becomes externalized.
It becomes a network roster instead of a dyadic roster. And it's harder to build and harder to maintain, which is why single parents deserve enormous respect and also enormous practical support.
Let's circle back to the implementation question. Someone has listened to this episode. They're convinced. They want to start. What's the exact thing they should do tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning, they should have a 10-minute conversation with their co-parent. They should identify the single most painful transition of the day, the moment where they most often find themselves confused, frustrated, or stepping on each other. They should agree on a fixed handoff time for that one transition, and they should agree on the three questions that will constitute the handoff. Then they should try it for 1 week.
10 minutes. One transition, 1 week.
That's the MVP. Everything else, the whiteboard, the weekly audit, the emergency protocols, comes later. The first step is just proving that a structured handoff makes things better.
If it doesn't,
iterate. Maybe the time is wrong. Maybe the questions are wrong. Maybe the transition they picked isn't actually the most painful one. The system is designed to be adjusted. The only failure mode is abandoning structure entirely.
The only failure mode is giving up.
That's it. That's the whole thing. The roster is not a perfect solution. It's an improvement over chaos. And in parenting, that's usually enough.
I think that's a good place to land. The roster as an improvement over chaos.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1932, a surveyor in the Azores discovered that the traditional Portuguese calçada paving stones on the island of São Miguel, when measured against the curvature of the volcanic terrain, actually conform to a truncated hexagonal tiling pattern with a margin of error of less than 3 millimeters across a continuous stretch of 400 meters, a precision that modern laser-guided pavers would struggle to replicate without algorithmic assistance.
3 millimeters across 400 meters.
I have questions about the surveying equipment available in 1932 on a volcanic island, but I suspect Hilbert has already moved on.
The Azorean pavers were apparently working at a level of precision we've since lost. That's either inspiring or deeply disconcerting.
I'm going with disconcerting.
To wrap this up, the care roster is a synthetic village, a pre-negotiated treaty, a dashboard for the hardest project most people will ever run. The question I'd leave listeners with is this: if you're not using a roster, what are you using instead? Because you're using something, intuition, improvisation, silent scorekeeping. And those tools have a track record. The roster might feel bureaucratic, but burnout feels worse.
That's the trade-off. Structure or drift.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the lights on, and for that deeply unsettling fact about Portuguese pavers. If you want more episodes, find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.